Direct session number 10600, level 2.
Mr. John Wainwright, reel 2. Were there any accidents during your time at before the First World War in the mines?
Well, there were always a lot of minor accidents, you know. In any case, they're always happening. People have been cuts and bruises and so forth. I must have cut my finger badly with some pushing a tub of coal or something, and there was a jagged edge on the iron on the rim, and it got septic and blood poisoning and so forth, and I was up for a week. That's the only accident that I can. Now, there are lots of things like that. Colliers, if you ever saw colliers, they always had bruises on their hands and their face, little blue marks, you know, where the coal had struck on their face and that sort of thing. But I don't remember any real serious accident. There were no fatalities that I remember at all.
When you were ill, did you get any pay or any benefit of any kind?
Oh, yes, there was a Workmen's Compensation Act, even in those days. Workmen's Compensation Act, and used to get compensation. I think the maximum was about 30 shillings a week, and that was the maximum for a skilled collier, you know. And for boys, it went less, but there was a certain amount. And then there was also a voluntary association, the Miners Permanent Relief Society, which was run jointly by the mine owners and the workmen, and the workmen paid a contribution of a few coppers per week. I think it was about threepence a week, something like that. And then the owners used to put the same amount to this, and this permanent relief society. They used to give relief to people who were injured, apart from the compensation, a few shillings a week. I don't remember exactly how much. So you got the normal compensation by Act of Parliament, and then there was this voluntary miners permanent relief thing. And where there was a fatality, the widow used to be something for the widows and so much for the children and so on.
Now, how far had you got? Your intention was to get to be a colliery manager. How far had you got when the war broke out? Just to finish up with your employment before the war, what stage had you reached by August 1914?
Well, I got to the stage that I could certainly have sat for the examination by the time I was 21. But by law, you couldn't take the examination. No, I don't think you could take the examination until you were 23. I think that was the rule.
So you didn't bother to take the examination for the deputy?
No, I took the deputy's examination, yes, that was a matter of course.
That
was just pie, really.
Become a deputy?
Well, I got the deputy certificate. You had to have a deputy certificate, as a matter of fact, before you could sit down for the colliery managers.
But did you actually do the job of deputy before the war?
Well, I wasn't old enough, couldn't do it. You couldn't do the job of deputy, but you had to get the deputies. You had to get the deputy's examination passed, so you would qualify at the age. I think you couldn't be a deputy until you were about 25 or so. And you had to have a first aid certificate too. So I mean, to take a first aid course, you had to have this first aid certificate. You had to have a certificate that you'd done so many years down the mine, including 2 years at the face. So I mean, that you had to fulfil all those things before you could even sit for a colliery manager. You had to have a deputy, you had to have a first aid one, you had to have this certificate from the management for somebody responsible that you spent at least 5 years down the mine, and that you'd done at least 2 years on the coal face. And there was something, oh yes, and we had to do a survey and take a plan of a survey that you'd done of some coal seam.
And you reckoned you'd be ready by 21, that's roughly 1915 or 1916,
yes,
you were looking to be ready to take and pass the exam.
Yeah, I was ready, yes. If the war hadn't broken, I could have taken that probably in the early 20s. And then I'd probably have had a job, be given a job as shot fire or deputy in due course as soon as I was of the right age, and go on from there.
Right. Now, looking at your life outside of your job, were you a member of any of the boys' organisations that were set up at the time? The Boy Scouts, the Boys' Brigade, Church Lads Brigade?
Well, I mean, as soon as I was about 8 years of age, first of all, we used to go to Sunday school. We used to go to Sunday school every week, you know, morning.
Which denomination?
Well, the Church of England, actually. And I mean, that was the usual thing for all the people that I knew, all my friends, all the lot. We just went there on Sundays. And then I joined the choir when I was 8 years of age. There again, I hadn't much choice about it. I remember the choir master was a friend of my father's, and just through that connection, I joined the choir. This choir master asked my father if he had got a son who was old enough to join the choir. Didn't ask even if I could sing, I don't think. So I joined the choir, and I was in the choir right up to the war breaking out, and afterwards, I think. And I think I'd be about 18, I think it was. We had a new vicar who came, who was keen on doing something for the youth of the parish, and the scout troop was formed, and I was, the curate was the scout master, and two of us were assistant scout masters. And that went on right up to the war.
So your interest in the Scouts only came late, in about 1912,
yeah.
1912 to 1914. You weren't a Scout as a young lad yourself from 1908 on, for instance, when the Scouts started.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, the Scouts only started, what, about 1908, I think. It was 1909. So that would be about 12 or something. Well, I remember one of the seniors in the choir. It went to the meeting. Ben Powell came to Wigan and addressed a meeting in Wigan, and this man was very keen. And I won't say that he formed a proper troop, but he formed a sort of patrol. And I remember we met as boys, youngsters, and I remember we had these staves and so forth. And we used to go out and we called scouting and did all the tying knots and all that sort of thing. But I think it was semi-official. I don't think it was ever really official. I don't know whether we were ever registered or not.
Did you have a meeting place?
We had a meeting place, yes. We used to. Yes. One of the boys had a hen cabin that was not being used, as a matter of fact. A sort of hut behind the house where he lived. And we used to meet in this hut during the week.
But when you were 18, you said that's about 1912.
You'd be about 1912, yes.
You formed this proper troop.
Oh, I formed the proper troop, and
how many boys? What did it have a name?
Oh yes, it was the St Mark's Newtowns BP Scouts. I remember we had a flag there. Yes, St Mark's Newtown, first Wigan, first Newtown. St Mark's BP Scouts.
And how many were in it?
Probably about 20, I should think, and something like that.
Did they have uniforms?
Oh, yes. I mean, this was a properly organised troop. And we had uniforms and we had camps. We had annual camps, and then we used to have weekend camps and used to take the boys out on Saturday afternoons and cooking the meals and all that sort of thing.
Where did you meet during the week, your scout night?
Well, yes, we met several times a week. In a room attached to a house in Scott Lane, Newtown, a few hundred yards from the church.
What kind of things would you do on these evening meetings?
Well, there were the traditional things, trying the knots, and the chaps had to know the scout law and so forth. And so, I mean, we just went by the book.
Did you have any of the military stuff that some of the scout troops did, drill and that sort of thing, even imitation rifles? Did you have any of that?
Oh, no, we didn't have anything of that sort of thing. I mean, it was just like a boys' club in a way.
So it wasn't military-oriented?
There was nothing military at all about it. In fact, from what I saw, the scouts, they were always poor marchers we never encouraged them to march in time and that sort of thing.
What did you, at the weekend, you say, and on the summer camps, what did you do then?
Well, the weekend sometime, we would go out. I remember going out to Rimington Pike, you know, which is an offshoot of the Pennines, you know. And we used to just go there, and the boys used to take the bulletins there. And we were out in the country, wandering about the countryside. And then they used to have the campfire and cook a meal and so on.
Right, any other boys did you have any special role as the assistant scout leader? What was your particular job in the patrol? I should have asked that, yes.
Well, the job of the assistant scoutmaster was to help the scoutmaster to run the troop. So you used to coach the boys. I remember we used to do a little bit of boxing. I remember we did a boxing sometime there, some of the boys. And we used to test the boys at their knowledge of first aid. You see, we did a little bit of first aid. We did something, we did some cooking and so forth.
How had you learnt these things?
Well, I suppose we learned them as the boys learned them too. Although I remember, as far as the first aid was concerned, I mean, I got my first aid certificate, I passed the St. John's ambulance, so I could do something with it, to teach them something about first aid.
But for the rest, you were just learning a bit before the boys.
We used to take it up from Baden Powell's scouting for boys, you know. And there was all this knot tying, you know. I mean, all the granny knots and sheep bends and kind of bow lines. We were testing the boys on the knots and so forth. And the main thing that we got was going out and being able to light a fire and being able to cook a meal and that sort of thing.
Were you a member of any other boys' clubs or boys' societies?
No, I was a member of a boys' club, but a bit later on I was a member of the Church of England Men's Society.
Was that before the war?
That was before the war, yes.
What was that?
Well, that was a society connected with the church. Of course, it was sort of religious there. They got ideals and so forth. But we used to meet and we used to have visits from other branches, and we would have discussions about local topics. I remember quite well discussing the problem of Ireland even in those days. We had a speaker one time who later became a well-known judge, Mr. Justice Gorman, Billy Gorman we always called him. He was a teacher in Wigan, and I remember he came to this meeting and we had this discussion about Northern Ireland, or about the Irish problem. Anyway, the thing was that it was just an ordinary young men's club there, and we used to have discussions. We used to have dances and concerts, and we used to have good visits from other organisations, and have a sort of social event.
Did you take part in any sports?
Yes, I was quite interested in cricket right from an early age. And we had a really good cricket team at St. Mark's Newtown, which was in one of the local leagues there. And when I first started as being a scorer for the second team, I think it was. I was only quite a youngster. Then I graduated to the first team as scorer. And during the week time, in the evening, of course, we used to go onto the cricket field and to doing some fielding and doing a bit of bowling and batting with the younger element, so that eventually we had a junior team, a third team. Then I graduated from that way. I remember the first time I ever batted for one of the teams was we were playing away, and I was gone with, I believe it was the first team too, and we were one man short. And the opposing team had batted first and got a good score, and then our team batted the second time, and he got about the ninth wicket, and they were creeping nearer to the opposing score, and it was decided that I should go in for the last wicket down, you know. I remember we made a stand of about 20, and I remember I scored 5 or 6 runs, and then somebody teased me out as one of these spin bowlers, you know, sort of tempted me to and I skied a ball, and that was it. But that was my first game. But later on, I played regularly for the second team, up and down the all around the district. So I've always been interested in cricket. And then another time I played for the St Mark's football team too, football club. And during our choir boy days, we had a choir boys football team, and we played local youth teams up and down the district.
Now, you mentioned you didn't smoke before the war. Did you drink at all?
No, I never smoked. I never had a drink of any description until the war broke out. I mentioned until the war broke out, because after when we were called up for the war, we were in Wigan for a few days sleeping.
I'll come to that, because we might as well keep it in order. Oh, yeah. Now, the other main thing that I know you were a member of was that you joined the Territorials. Could you tell me how that came about?
Well, I told you about the two of us being the assistant scoutmasters, you know. Well, my co-assistant joined the local yeomanry, Lloyd George Yeomanry from Ashton, and it was very, very difficult to get into that, you know. I would like to have joined the yeomanry.
What made you want to join the yeomanry?
Well, I think there was more status about it, you know. I mean, you had a horse and so forth, and had to... They seemed to be rather on a higher plane than the normal foot soldiers, and it just appealed to me, the uniform and so forth, and the fact that this friend of mine had joined, and I knew one or two older people had joined and so forth, and it just appealed to me. So when I couldn't join that, I joined the local territory, the 5th Manchester's at Wigan. I didn't know anybody there connected with them. I just went down one there.
But you joined on the 11th of February 1913.
That's it, yeah.
You told me. How did you actually go about joining? What was the procedure?
Well, there was a drill hall in Wigan, which had been there for a long time, for the old volunteers, you know, the volunteer battalion of the Manchester Regiment. And I just knew, I didn't know anybody who was in the territories at all. I knew there was a drill hall there. So I just went down one morning. I think I was on the afternoon shift, you see, and so I mean, I got the morning to spare and the after part of the afternoon. And I went down to the drill hall, and there were some of they had permanent officials there. There was a permanent sergeant major and staff sergeant and so forth, and some staff there. So I went down there, and I remember quite well saluting the sergeant major, you know. I don't know why, but I mean, I thought that was the right thing to do. I always said, you mustn't do that, laddie. You don't salute non-commissioned officers or warrant officers. So I just joined up. Well, first of all, they sent me to the local doctor, who was the doctor, the surgeon for the battalion. And I went there and passed the examination.
How thorough was it, the medical?
Oh, I think it was pretty thorough. I think it was a good examination. Yes, probably had to strip and all, had the chest examined and tapped and pushed about and the teeth examined and all the rest of it. Oh, it was a good examination. So then I just joined and had to sign the declaration, serve the king and country, whatever it was.
What kit and uniform did they issue you with?
Well, first of all, you joined as a recruit, and as a recruit, I mean, you were expected to attend drills every week, as many drills as you possibly could, and in the evenings, or people who were on shift, where you go down the daytime, like I went. They wanted to sign on, and then we would do drills and do a bit of, we had a bit of a firing range in the drill hall.
What exactly drill were you learning? It was the
normal infantry drill, you know, just marching about there and forming fours and all that sort of thing.
Did you see the point in it?
Well, you just took it in your stride. It was one of the things you had to do. I think it's the smartness and get you to obey orders and do things in unison and that sort of thing. I suppose we just enjoyed it, you know. But when you went to camp, it became more elaborate, you know. I mean, you had to go through all the the drill movements, not like the trooping of the colours, but on a very much smaller scale, you know, all sorts of complicated manoeuvres, forming platoons on the left, the right, centre and all the rest of it.
Did you go, while you were actually attending drill hall, would you go on route marches?
Well,
or any other fitness?
Yes, we'd want to do weekend camps. We had a firing course. I went to Sailor Bridge somewhere to a firing range and had to fire the regulation course, firing at 100 yards, 400 yards and 500 yards or whatnot. Proper firing range course where you had to do the musketry.
How did they teach you to fire the rifle? Was there a special method they insisted you follow?
Well, I think I started telling you that at the drill hall we had a miniature range for a 22 rifle, you know, there. And we were taught to use the rifle there, and we had a little competition. I remember I won the prize for the best recruit. I remember doing that. I won that because from this range, from this practice there. So that was the first part, and then later on, we went onto the rifle, you know, and we did the proper firing course at the firing range, which was an army range.
You'd done well on the small rifle. How did you .22? How did you do on the real thing?
Well, you had to pass. I think I was pretty good. I was a pretty good marksman.
Did you actually pass out with a marksman?
Oh yes, passed out. You just had to pass the test. You had to get so many. There were so many points for a bull, and so many for an inner, so many for an outer, and you had to get the requisite number of marks before you passed out on the firing test.
What about bayonet fighting or bayonet drill? Did you learn any of that?
Well, I mean that came more later on after the war was declared.
Was there anything else you were taught before the war then that you can remember?
Well, I went to two camps, two fortnight, and we had camps in the summer.
What do you remember about those camps?
Well, I remember first of all we went to North Wales, and we had route marches, and we had exercises, which were just like the ordinary soldiers' exercises, all in the open. Firing and all that going on. So it was the usual military exercise that we were taught, just like the regular army.
And now, what about the conditions in the tent? How did you set to that? Were you used to it from the Boy Scouts?
Well, we've been used to camping over in the sky, so we just took it in our stride again there. We just slept in the tents and got used to sleeping on the... We had palliasses when we went to camp. The first job was to draw your palliasses and fill them with straw, hay or something, and then you used to roll those up, and you had your blankets, and you used to use a kit bag as a pillow, as I seem to remember. But the camp life, well, it was enjoyable in a way. It was hard going, and hard route marches and hard exercise. And firing, we used to fire blank shots, you know, we used to go like as if we were skirmishing order, going on skirmishes, and had to get down, the enemy was coming at us. So we were taught to fire and waiting for orders to fire. We used to use blank cartridges and so on and so forth. So it was your normal training that a soldier gets.
Did the tactical training or any of the training include anything to do, pre-war, anything to do with trenches or what later became known as trench warfare?
I never remember doing. No, it was more or less open warfare. I mean, trench warfare only came in really with the First World War, didn't it? So I mean, all the I remember down in the south of Wales, south in Pirbright, in that area, it was all open. It was all open work. All was in the open, advancing and then getting down and firing from the front position, taking advantage of the ground and so on. But we used to go through the normal military training that the recruiter got.
What did you think of your officers?
Well, the officers were rather a class apart, in my mind. It seemed to be that all the officers in our territorials were all the pretty high-class professional people, doctors' sons, clergymen's sons, and so forth. mill owners' sons and so forth. I can think of most of the officers that we had. Freddie Brown, who was a Captain Brown in my A company, he was a mill owner. There were the Browns Mills in Wigan. Well, he's one of the sons of there. And so forth. So went on. One Major Wall, Captain Wall was a solicitor. Captain Rogers was a mining engineer and so forth. They were all the sort of the professional class, really, above the normal. So, but we got on all right with them.
Were they competent at the time? Did they seem competent during the training?
Yes, I think so. I think they were very good, and they were very good people, I think, most of them.
What about the NCOs? What were they like, and the instructors?
Well, the NCO, I think you were told we had a nucleus of regular army. They had a regimental sergeant major who was seconded from the Manchester Regiment and so forth. And one of them was a staff sergeant, a colour sergeant. And then there was someone else. We had a quartermaster, a regular army quartermaster. The adjutant of the battalion was a regular army man. I remember Captain Saunders. He was from the Leinsters, and he was seconded to the territory. So we had this nucleus of regulars there. And they set a good example, and they were good for the we came from the ordinary ranks. I think it was a case if anybody showed any initiative, it got anything about them, they were promoted.
Did the NCOs treat you fairly, do you think?
Well, I think so. Yes, they did. I can remember they treated me very fairly one time. I remember at the camp just before the war in 1914. I think I told you we went down to Purbright. In that area in Surrey, I think it was. And the last night I was there, I must have had something that upset me. And I was pretty ill. I was really, really ill, sick and vomiting, and goodness knows what not. And there was a sergeant's tent belonging to the company, about four sergeants in. I remember these chaps taking me in and looking after me for the night. And I remember sleeping there all that night. So I mean, they took an interest in the people underneath them, to that extent, anyway.
What about your fellow other ranks? The fellow privates. What kind of men were they? What background did they come from?
Well, most of them in the territorials. A lot of them. Some of them were miners, and there were fitters and apprentices. People who were apprentices. And there were shop assistants and so forth.
How did you get on with these people?
I think we were all very, very friendly. I mean, we were the same organisation, and I presume we joined for the same reasons. One of the reasons was, I think, you know, at that time there was a lot of talk about the possibility or almost the inevitability of war. In those days it was the Kaiser, Bill. And he was building up his navy and so forth. And everybody thought there would be a war before very long. The Territorial Army a few years before had been reorganised. I think it was Lord Roberts who really did the job, who started the job. And there was this general interest, I think. And the idea that we weren't going to be beaten by a man like the Kaiser. So I think that probably had something to do with it.
What had you heard about the Germany and the Kaiser? What sort of things were being said?
Well, we'd heard everything. We knew about the building up of the German navy, and so forth. And I suppose we looked upon it. Everybody looked upon it as a threat to this country. That was the feeling. That we were going to be attacked and we ought to be prepared for it, because you know what the Kaiser said about the contemptible little army. We'd only a very small regular army, so I think there was the feeling, well, generally, we've got to do something about it.
Where did you get your information from at that time? What sources were you getting?
Well, there wasn't any wireless, any radio at that time. That was before the radio days, but. There were newspapers, you know, and it was quite common for people to get evening newspapers. the evening newspapers, and we used to get all the news, and the Sunday newspapers. Everybody read the papers, so that was the way you got it generally.